everyone to Mystery AI Hype Theater 3000, where we seek catharsis in the age of AI hype. We find the worst of it and pop it with the sharpest needles we can find.
Along the way, we learn to always read the footnotes, and each time we think we've reached peak AI hype, the summit of Bullshit Mountain, we discover there's worse to come. I'm Alex Hanna, Director of Research for the Distributed AI Research Institute.
And I am not Emily Bender, as you might have guessed. I'm Timneet Gebru, Founder and Executive Director of the Distributed AI Research Institute, or DARE. Emily will be back with us next time. So this is episode 30, which we're recording on April 1st of 2024. And I am so excited to announce that we are going all in on AI safety.
That's right. We've finally seen the light. AI really is all powerful. It does pose an existential threat to humanity, and we're going to put all of our resources into making sure it doesn't replace us as the dominant species on planet Earth. The new name of this podcast is Mystery AI Hope Theater 3000.
I couldn't even get the words out of my mouth. I thought this would be a cute April Fool's joke, but that just about as much as I can handle, so...
Oh, thank God. I was about to pass out. What are we actually talking about today?
Well, our favorite people, billionaires like Marc Andreessen, would have you believe that the opposite of doomerism and AI safety is what he is preaching, techno-optimism. The belief that limiting AI's uses will only hurt humanity in the long run. That societies, quote-unquote, grow or die, like sharks, he wrote. And apparently, it also gets sharks completely wrong. And he put out a manifesto last fall that outlines all of this and more in rather breathtakingly grandiose language.
So much like sharks ourselves, we've been waiting for our chance to savage this manifesto to death. And we also want to take a closer look at the group of beliefs that tech CEOs, our would-be overlords, have been using to guide disastrous decisions about what technology is worth investing in. You've probably seen the acronym TESCREAL, coined by Timneet and Emil Torres by now. We're going to break it down and explain why it's all nonsense, but dangerous nonsense. So, let's go ahead and get into this thing. I have to say from the top, this was very difficult to read.
I'm very resentful that you made me do this. Resentful.
Look, you know what? It's you, when you agree to come on the pod, you gotta play by the rules.
Yeah.
So this is on A16.7's website, which is Andreessen Horowitz's the venture capital firm's website. And it starts with three epigraphs. The first is, I'm going to read these in full because they're bad. So the first is by Walker Percy, who, if you don't know him, is no surprise. He is, this is someone else that I was going to mention, but this one reads, "You live in a deranged rage, more deranged
age.
Than usual."
It should be rage, but it's
age. Yes. "More deranged than usual, because despite great scientific and technological advances, man has not the faintest idea of who he is and what he is doing." Oh, dear. Okay. And then the second one by Marianne Tupi. "Our species is 300,000 years old. For the first 290,000 years, we were foragers subsisting in a way that's still observable among the Bushmen of Kalahari and the Senegalese of the Andaman Islands. Even after Homo sapiens embraced agriculture, progress is painfully slow. A person born in Sumer in 4000 BC would find the resources, work, and technology available in England at the time of the Norman conquest or in the Aztec Empire at the age of Columbus quite familiar. Then, beginning in the 18th century, many people's standard of living skyrocketed. What brought about this dramatic improvement and why?"
Many is doing a lot here. Many people's.
Yeah. It's oof. This is by Marianne Tupi, who owns the domain humanprogress.org, and also a fellow at the right-wing Cato Institute.
Fun. Wonderful human.
Great human. And then lastly, Thomas Edison saying, "There's a way to do it better. Find it." Oh my gosh.
They have
All right,
found it, I
that's
guess.
the I mean there's already a lot there in this in these epigraphs. So yeah, like what do you think, Denise?
I just, the Bushmen, right. And then, apparently before colonization, everybody was in the dark, not doing anything, starving. And then colonization came, and many people's standard of living just skyrocketed. And it's
Right.
gonna continue to skyrocket boundlessly.
Yeah. And I mean it's just like the endemic here. Colonization happened, we had Europe. What happened? I mean, yeah, colonization, the Industrial Revolution and the development of capitalism. And then everybody's cost of living,
Lies,
everybody's
Alex,
improved.
lies. We
You
are
know?
being lied to. We're being
Yes.
lied to.
So we're jumping in. So we're gonna read, yeah, the first bit. So it's very, very dramatic. I mean, this first off, the writing of this is absolutely horrible. So the first subheading is Lies. We are being lied to. We are told that technology takes our job, reduces our wages, increases inequality, threatens our health, ruins the environment, degrades our society, corrupts our children, impairs our humanity, threatens our future, and is ever on the verge of ruining everything. We are told to be angry, bitter, and resentful about technology. We are told to be pessimistic. The myth of Prometheus in various updated forms like Frankenstein, Oppenheimer. I found this to be funny because Oppenheimer was like a real guy,
Yeah,
not a myth,
Frankenstein, then
then
Terminator, and Oppenheimer.
Terminator haunts our nightmares. We are told to denounce our birthright, our intelligence, our control over nature, our ability to build a better world. We are told to be miserable
Miserable.
about the future.
I mean, we're not told to be miserable about the future. We're told to not have the future that these dudes want, like are making for us, right? We're saying we can be in control of our future and not just hand it down to these bozos over here. Like, I don't know. When I was reading it, I was trying to imagine how he wrote it. It just feels like this like rah, 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 lies, toll, technology, go, let go. Like that's how I'm feeling, And it's
Yeah,
just like, calm down, dude. Are you okay?
and for those of you who like aren't seeing the writing, I mean the writing is very, is very jumpy. It's, the line breaks are all, pretty ridiculous. I mean, it's these one sentence paragraphs. And just in the chat, yeah, I mean the kind of Medusa skirt points out that Oppenheimer is literally a story of I did a thing and then I regretted it. And then Itty Bitty Kitty Committee, great username, saying, since when's our birthright control over nature?
Right? We are nature too, aren't we? I'm so confused why that mean what that means even.
Well, it's a very particular sort of view of what the human is, right? I mean, this is a very, like, and just to outline, I mean, this is a kind of, just to give us some background, and maybe you can tell us more about how these folks fit into the test reel bundle to meet. But the kind of idea like this document outlines for Andreessen, for other folks that call themselves, effective accelerationists, that they are trying to effectively set a counter to existential risk people, but from within kind of the same view of effectively saying, well, we still believe AI is very powerful, but we're going to use this for a particular sort of destiny that we're going towards them. So to me, I'd love if you could even take the step back and say about, how this type of folk, these types of folks fit into the consistency of the test reel bundle of ideologies.
Yeah, so I wanted to write a paper with Emil Pitoris, who is a philosopher and was in that Test Grill bundle, so they know these kinds of thoughts very well. And so like the whole AGI, artificial general intelligence thing, was giving me eugenics vibes, and I had been around the effective altruists for a long time. And I kind of, you know, just try to get away with from them. Like, I never really paid them that much attention until that it just seemed to be their money driving the field of AI. And this whole AGI thing basically has taken over the field of AI. So we started writing this paper, and it just became unwieldy to talk about all of these people. Like, remember Sam Altman, who used to be kind of an effective altruist, but then talks about this Cosmos thing, but then talks of this, and I was like, look, I don't think we can write this paper because it's becoming so, you know, we have to remind everyone what, like, this person was believing, the other person was believing. And then Emil was like, what if we just define the test real bundle first and we come up with this weird acronym? You can veto it because it's such a strange acronym. And then we kind of talk about what it is, and then we can just move on to that conversation. That's how we came up with this acronym. And so TuskReal stands for transhumanism, extropianism, singularitarianism, and we're gonna get to the singularity part here too in this manifesto. And then what's cosmism, and he talks about, you know, going to space and colonizing space and stuff here. Rationalism, effective altruism, and long-termism. And it was very useful to come up with this term because you see that not all of them are exactly in one of these ideologies, but they're sort of like around them all the time. So the transhumanists are basically direct descendants of the Anglo-American eugenics tradition, right? They want to not, they're more radical. So they not only want to create a superior human species, but they want to create a superior just species altogether, a post-human. So, you know, and then, you know, you have the extropians, the cosmos, the extropians. This sounds like the extropians to me. They have, they used to have, you know, they were like around in the 90s. They have a listserv. All your favorite people, like Nick Bostrom, was in it. What's his name? Oh, wow, I forgot his name. Oh, Elisir Utosky, who, you know, his claim to fame is writing a Harry Potter fanfic, and he has a blog post. And guess what? He can just write op-eds on Time Magazine talking about bombing data centers. So they're all in there. And so this whole conversation about boundless expansion, intelligence, technology, they have these four or five principles. And this to me sounds exactly like the extropians, the whole, you know, boundless expansion, infinite things, whatever. And so I wonder if they knew, the effective accelerationists knew about the extropians, if they would even come up with a new name, right? And then you have the rationalists and the effective altruists and the long-termists. The long-termists sort of say that, hey, if we're going to have so many billions and trillions of people in the world and they can live digitally happily ever after and colonize space, and so even preventing the existence of those, you know, happy digital beings is immoral. It's murder. And he kind of says that here too, which is really interesting. So, you know, these are the people driving our technological future. Isn't it fun?
Yeah, right. And I mean, it gets good to get into. I mean, the next two parts are really kind of get at the heart of it. So it's worth reading these in full. So the next part of this, the big title is Truth. This is what they're saying the truth is. Our civilization was built on technology. Our civilization is built on technology. And I don't know why there's an emphasis on that. Technology is the glory of human ambition and achievement, the spearhead of progress and the realization of our potential. For hundreds of years, we properly glorified this until recently. I am here to bring the good news, like Jesus Christ himself and Paul and his apostles. Is Easter, by the way. That's not in the text. We can advance to a far superior way of living and of being. We have the tools, the systems, the ideas. We have the will. It is time, once again, to raise the technology flag. It is time to be techno-optimists. And then we get into the thing about technology. I'm not going to read all this, but there's a few things that are absolutely absurd.
Is this where he talks about depopulation? Right. Yes. Only three sources, if you want to highlight that.
Me read that first, and then I want you to read that. So technology in big caps. Techno-optimists believe that societies, like sharks, grow or die. And this has set off our producer, Christy Taylor, to be like, that's not what sharks do. And so,
bad science. That's not what sharks do.
Yeah, bad science. We hate bad science over here on the pod. And, you know, we should also say throughout this entire piece, Christy says in the chat, oh, you captured my voice perfectly. We should also say that throughout the piece, there's no citations. There's just like a list of people you should read at the end of this.
Music you should listen to, actually. That's what I'm going to do now on in my papers. Yeah. Be like, have Missy Elliott or somebody. You know, that captures what I'm trying to say.
Hey, I'm down with that. So he says, techno-optimists believe that societies like sharks grow or die. We believe that growth is progress leading to vitality, expansion of life, increasing knowledge, higher well-being. We agree with Paul Collier when he says economic growth isn't a cure-all, but lack of a growth is a kill-all. And then going down, why don't you read this? There are only three sources. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, there are only three sources of growth: population growth, natural resource utilization, and technology. Developed societies are depopulating all over the world, across cultures. The total human population may already be shrinking. This reminds me of the pronatalists. I mean, he probably is one. You know, they're also in the Tesk Real Bundle, right? Like Elon Musk and them. Julia Black did a really, she had a great article on when she was a Business Insider on the pronatalists in Silicon Valley. They're like funding all of these ways to, for, of course, you know, white people to have kids. I mean, it's not us that are depopulating, right? We're overpopulating. It's probably how he's feeling about it.
Well, that's what developed societies is, you know, that's effectively a watchword for, you know, he's being like, black and brown people, their populations are growing, like the barbarians are growing, but the white people are shrinking, right? I mean, that's effectively
the great replacement theory kind of
situation. So it's effectively replacement theory, here. So yeah, I mean, that's effectively saying. So it does have this kind of convergence with the pronatalists. Effectively, you know, we need to promote good, you know, good eugenics. We need to promote good racial hygiene. I mean, it's very much, you know, in that.
He's not being subtle about it at all. No, not at all.
Not at all. Yeah, I mean, this is, and so then here, down here, I wanted to hit on. Economists measure technological progress as productivity growth, which, first off, that's not true, because productivity growth is a measurement of how much output you have as a function of inputs. Technology is one portion of it, but it can also deal with how much labor you have and differing in labor market inputs. And so he's effectively, I mean, you know, selecting on a dependent variable by saying, you know, we're going to measure productivity and technology as ones. So that's effectively just wrong. And then he says, we believe this is the story of material development of our situation. This is why we are not still living in mud huts.
All right, yeah.
Eking out a meager survival and waiting for nature to kill us. This is why we, our descendants, will live in the stars.
We see the cosmos. This is the cosmos stuff. Yeah. Sam Altman also talks about the stars and colonizing the stars. Why can't they, like, think of a world they're not colonizing? I don't understand. It just, like, that imagination does not exist.
Yeah, there always has, colonization is always in this. And I think further down he says something like, there is no more physical frontier.
Oh, yeah.
And there, you know, now we have to approach the technological frontier. So effectively, like, okay, there's no more native people to kill. So we gotta do other types of colonization, right? and so, I mean, it's really just incredible. I mean, the racism in here is not subtle at all. It's pretty
The other part in this section was like, we believe that there is no material problem, whether created by nature or by technology, that cannot be solved with more technology. Just like,
well, this group is really great. So every line here, and I cannot emphasize how disjoint this is. I mean, this man, like, Shirley gave, you know, went to a grad student, said, you know, no, that's too, he didn't go to anybody
in
academia.
He just sat there.
He wrote it. There was no one who edited it. You know, it's very possible ChatGPT, you know, like had a hand in it. So, but this group here is, we had a problem starvation. So we invented the Green Revolution.
And nobody's starving anymore, don't you know?
Green Revolution, don't you know? We had a problem of darkness. So we invented electric lighting. We had a problem, fucking candles? Incredible. We had a problem of cold. So we invented indoor heating. Did we have fire? We had a problem of heat, so we invented air conditioning.
And then the air conditioning is too much, so you have to turn the heater on too.
That solved the
air conditioning problem.
Yeah. We had a problem of isolation, so we invented the internet.
And people are all so unisolated than ever, right? They're as social as ever with the internet. They're not isolated at all anymore.
It's such a nonsensical thing to say. And it's such a wrong statement to say we had a problem of isolation, so we invented the internet. First off, not why the internet was invented. Second off, I think most surveys of kind of like having trusted people, you know, there's the kind of bowling alone hypothesis that Robert Putnam and people in that tradition have written about in the General Social Survey that tend to show that like people have fewer close friends that they did, at least in the U.S., than they did 30 or 40 years ago. There's things that urbanists have written about the lack of kind of third spaces. So no, we didn't have a problem of isolation.
Yeah, and they've been writing about how young people, especially in the West, where they're always on their phones and stuff, are spending less time interacting with each other than they did like 20 years ago,
yeah.
Right? But we can't cite anything. Apparently, that's the rule here. We're gonna have to cite a song about it, or just tell him like vibes, right?
It's all vibes here. The whole thing is Nietzschean vibes. Incredible. We had a problem with pandemics, so we invented vaccines.
And now we won't have pandemics anymore.
We fixed the pandemics. We have a problem of poverty, so we invent technology to create abundance.
And now there's no poverty.
We
it's
did
over.
All the
it's
things.
Fixed.
Give us a real world problem, and we can invent technology that will solve it.
The problem is he's blocked me on Twitter, so I can't ask him to do this.
I thought you were. He might be lonely without your presence.
Yeah, he blocked me. I can't ask him to build the technology that would solve my loneliness. His they funded this e-girl, e-boyfriend site that they had. They called it e-girl, but now they changed the name of it. Maybe they, at least they understood that probably that wasn't how they should advertise it. But that's how they're solving people's loneliness.
Well, don't you know love doesn't scale? Which he says down in this
That's
piece.
Right.
So the next piece is called Markets. And so it's effectively, you know, it's capitalism, rah-rah. He cites all our fun favorite neoliberals such as Friedrich Hayek, Adam Smith, and kind of Chicago, different Chicago school economists. You know, he says, you know, we're opposed to centralized planning and communism. But the piece, this is like a bit, we've seen some of this, but there's this piece here where he says, David Friedman points out that people only do things for other people for three reasons: love, money, or force. Love doesn't scale, so the economy can only run on money or force. The force experiment has been run and found wanting. Let's stick with money. Oh, my dear. So there's so much here. I mean, first off, I don't know who David Friedman is, but if you know in the chat, please let us know. I imagine he's one of these terrible, either Chicago school economists or maybe just some dude with a blog. Who knows? But it's so wild that, I mean, effectively the argument here being that people are not allowed to be altruist in any kind of sense. They only do things basically for, you know, for these kinds of things. And I'm just like, that's what a impoverished view of the human condition,
of humanity, right?
Yeah.
General.
It's just, I mean, right. It's, they're really, yeah, they're very much telling on themselves.
It's so
here.
Interesting, like the way he writes, you know, David Friedman points out that X, and like, is it based on what? Just vibes, research, anything. It doesn't matter. We should believe it because David Friedman says that and he points it out. So we just gotta take it for granted, you know. That's the way he's citing his sources.
Yeah, and Arcane Sciences and Medusa Skirt in the chat say, so David Friedman is an anarcho-capitalist economist, and Medusa Skirt says is the son of Milton Friedman and follows in his footsteps as being the worst kind of economist.
Of course.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a very particular type of individual in the citation.
Is this where he says we believe in market discipline?
Yeah, so he says we believe in markets, to quote Nicholas Stern. We believe markets are the way we take care of people we don't know. We believe markets are the way to generate societal wealth for everything else we want to pay for, including basic research, social welfare programs, and national defense. So effectively saying that, you know, the markets are going to provide. So, I mean, this is a bit of a standard libertarian kind of vibe. You know, we don't actually need social welfare programs. We effectively need market incentives to find ways to help people when markets are doing something that is helping everybody out.
But you know, the thing is, like, what drives me nuts with their arguments is that they have the highest government handouts. Mm-hmm. All these people who talk about the free market and how we just gotta let the market decide, get the most amount of money from the government,
right,
whether it is during wartime to create some military related stuff, which is why they're all in on military and AI now, right? Like Mark Andreessen Horowitz is starting to invest a ton in this kind of stuff. Or, you know, like Elon Musk and what kind of tax, how much of our tax money he took. So there's all these people who talk about the free market and such. Well, maybe, okay, let's see if the free market works, then don't take the government handouts if that's what you really believe
in.
But they get most of the money.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have so much of the way in which there is government subsidy in making these organizations, you know, successful. I mean, you know, there's so much in this. I mean, even kind of thinking about the development of like the early internet, you know, the early internet would not have existed without government, you know, the development of ARPANET, the kind of NSF investment in the internet. I mean, there's so much here in which there is foundational investment from government funds now. I mean, it's very ahistorical to even say that it is not so, right?
And stealing,
yeah,
like stealing of everyone's data, so theft. We're not even talking about the free market here. It's actual theft that is currently going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, but no, he did. And I think he admits at some point, not in this one, that if you had to have copyright protection or anything else, that like these current of systems wouldn't exist. And I'm like, okay, that's theft. That's not free market, sir.
Yeah. So getting down here, there's a few other knee slappers I want to hit. So technological innovation in the market system is inherently philanthropic.
Oh, yeah.
By a 50-to-1 ratio. Who gets more value from a new technology, the single company that makes it or the millions or billions of people who use it to improve their lives? And what gets me is that he ends this with QED, like he just...
He
just finished the fucking proof. Oh.
Yeah. I was like, QED, proof, C, music in references.
Right.
Verse one.
Yeah, I know. QED, assholes. Oh my gosh.
Merit. This is merit.
This is merit. We're seeing it. There's some other things I want to hit here, like the talk of universal basic income. We believe a universal basic income would turn people into zoo animals to be farmed by the state. Man was not meant to be farmed. Man was meant to be useful, to be productive, to be proud.
Proud.
And I'm like, first off, mixing metaphors, zoo animals are different from farm animals, first off. So just like...
As a farmer,
I have my chickens and I just put my plants in the ground. And then farmed by the state. How are they actually farmed by the state? Like, I don't actually understand what the state gets back from a UBI.
Like, you feed farm animals. I'm trying to work with him here, and I don't understand.
That, like,
I mean, it's not like I'm into UBI. It's the same sort of idea that's created by these people anyway.
Well,
it's funny,
UBI,
like,
different instantiations of UBI, right? I mean, because UBI on the merits has its own merits. But their kind of idea of UBI is very much tied to...
I don't like Sam Altman's idea of UBI, where, like, they get to have all the money and we have the minimum little sustaining all of us money that just to consume their stuff, right?
Yeah.
I like, you know, Michael Tubbs' idea of UBI that he tried out in Stockton. But for me, this whole thing is like infighting in a family that I just don't want to be close to, right? Like, he's infighting with other people in the test grill bundle because they have their existential risk. Let's pause AI. You know, it's gonna dominate us and kill us all and all that. Maybe we should have UBI and all that. So he's like addressing them, you know. He's not even addressing us, like, we're not really people to talk to, but
he's addressing
all these people.
Yeah, he's addressing kind of UBI advocates that come from a particular sort of tradition. He's addressing existential risk nonsense, etc. Okay, we've got 13 minutes left to go through this. What are the other, like, best hits you want to hit before we hit this?
Oh God. I mean, I remember I was just texting you as I was reading this, like, why are you making me do this?
So then the next piece.
Smart people in smart societies outperform less smart ones.
Yes.
On virtually every metric we can measure. Intelligence is the birthright of humanity. We should expand it as fully and broadly as we possibly can.
Yeah, so this is under the intelligence section. I also, like, mark this in bright red, like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean,
if I had to choose the best hit in this particular section, is artificial intelligence is best thought of as a universal problem solver, and we have a lot of problems to solve. And, like, this is basically the whole AGI people. Mm-hmm. They're all of them write this in different instantiations. It's like, if you go to one of DeepMind's blog posts, it's like, oh, you know, AI has already started fixing climate change, and eventually we'll figure out how to create the algorithms that will also solve all the other problems that we have. It's like, you're trying to create a machine god.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I can't solve the problems, but I'll make the thing that solves all the problems if you give me $7 trillion.
Right, or $100 billion supercomputer or whatever that Altman and Satya are saying they're building. And the thing is, this thing called the universal problem solver is, you know, like, you've been posting a little to LinkedIn recently about, like, expert systems. And, like, there's been things called the universal problem solver before, right? And they failed spectacularly because there's, you know,
ever since the inception of AI.
Yeah, like, it's
inception of AI.
Yeah, there's very much, you know, like, there's different, you know, different aspects of that, right? And so there's been things called universal problem solvers, right? And, you know, there's no such thing.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, we can solve poverty, but that would make it such that I would have to give up some amounts of my privilege. It's a social problem. That's not fun.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
It's more fun to create a machine god. Like, I want to think about that,
right?
You know? And so... I don't know how to do it yet. Although, according to this, I think we had already fixed poverty. I'm kind of confused.
I think
we have a lot of problems to solve.
I think we fixed it. And then, but then somebody thought somebody should get, you know, then there was a welfare state that came along. And then we had more poverty because people were zoo animals to be farmed. There's some things here that also we gotta hit. Like, we believe any deceleration of AI will cost lives, deaths that were preventable by the AI that was prevented from, deaths that were prevented by the AI that was prevented from existing is a form of murder.
Form of this is a very long-termist, thing. It's like, leaving, not letting the future digital colonizers exist is murder. So you're a
It's a
murderer.
different, it's kind of a slightly different argument, but in the, you know, but the, you know, but it's more like, there are deaths currently that could be preventable by AI now. So, for instance, he would sort of say, instead
War.
of the 10 to the 4, 54th children, as Arcane Sciences said in the chat, that many children that are potentially, it's more like there are people that may exist in the near future, but because we didn't allow an AI tool to fix climate change somehow and prevent climate refugees, then you're actually murdering them. So it's a slightly different type of fake murder, but it is still fake
Yeah,
murder.
it's a cousin. It's a cousin of
It's a
the
cousin.
first,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Let's move to
Oh
energy,
yeah, let's
maybe.
go to energy and then, oh gosh, all right, let's go to energy and then, so in energy, he's effectively saying, we need basically, deregulation is the reason we don't have unlimited energy because we prevented nuclear fission and nuclear power plants. Of course, no discussion of any, of the nuclear catastrophes.
This always upsets me because I remember Jan LeCun is always he used to always boast about, France and how like it's so green because nuclear energy like it's 70 something percent is powered by nuclear energy and like the uranium is not mined in the middle of the Louvre, right? Like they're not like that's not Niger is the one that is bearing the brunt of all of those issues, whether it's pollution, whether it's radiation, and all of these things. And no, but these people, that's not, those are not the things they think about.
And I mean, it's interesting to also sort of think, because I mean, there could be a discussion of nuclear energy that is smarter, but it's also, it's also the fact that there's like it's become kind of a stopgap, and I mean he calls it here a literal silver bullet, right? So we in terms of nuclear fusion, which I feel like nuclear fusion is similar to AI, where we're almost 5 years away from always having fusion, but I'm quickly getting out of my depth about talking about fusion.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this
All
stuff.
right, so let's see. There's
Abundance.
abundance. Let's see if I want to. What else? Is there anything you want to hit on here in abundance?
It's kind of like the idea that they don't want to feel like there are any rules, like the conservation of energy, or just they don't want their time to end. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, it's just like they want more of everything forever, like all the time. And I don't understand that concept. It's the same in the test grill bundle. It's just like they just want more expansion forever, always. No concept of enough. Like, don't you have the concept of enough of something in your life? You know, I don't know. And sharing, like,
Well,
I don't get
there's
it.
an idea that effectively, if you have a pure market-based environment, you're going to solve everything for everyone. And it's sort of, I think the thing that really trips me up is that these people really have no concept of variance. Like, yes, the mean, there might be a mean quality of life improvement, but there has been have been more destructive wars, more intense genocides. We have been able to kill people more efficiently. There's a S there's a there's an SMBC comic, which I think sums this up very well, where it's like there's a guy talking to God, and God's like, "Oh, you know, everything's been improving. Why are you all complaining?" And he's like, "Have you actually looked at the amount of variation there is?" And God looks at like the standard errors and he's like, "Holy shit, what the fuck? What the fuck has gone wrong?"
And like the planet is kind of burning and, you know, climate catastrophe and such. I don't understand where that is in this whole analysis. I think my gold in this whole, I don't know if this is the abundance section, is that Silicon Valley code of paying it forward. Did you get that one? Do you remember
No,
that
what is
one?
that?
We believe in the Silicon Valley code of pay it forward,
Oh,
trust via
yes.
aligned incentives, generosity of spirit to help one another learn and grow. And I'm like, if I had to think of one Silicon Valley code, right, like pay it forward
It's totally
is
nuts.
not it. It's really not
It's
it.
we. I got mine. You fuck off. Abstract Tekkerak says he's looking for the Konami code of life: up, up, down, down, left, right, start. I want to go down to the becoming technological supermen part because this, to me, is the like most like outright fascist part of this. So it's like very much reading like a kind of a Nietzschean Übermensch kind of situation, where it's saying like we need to become, it is the most virtuous thing we can do to follow technology, to become these technologists. And then he has this statement here: "We believe that while the physical frontier, at least on Earth, is closed, the technological frontier is wide open." So yeah, we've colonized all those people already. We're done. We've killed all the natives. We can actually go and get past and kill all the non-tech people too.
But we also can get the whole universe now. There's no limit, is what these people are saying, right? And in the cosmos have, like they say, paradise engineering.
Oh my
Like the
gosh.
once you become a post, this is why I was so mad reading this, because I'm like, I wrote a paper already. I'm done. I want to move on from these people. And it's like, you know, once you're trans, you know, you become a post-human. That's what the transhumanists care about. And then the cosmos, like, it's not just enough to be a post-human. Post-humans have to do paradise engineering around the cosmos,
Yeah,
right?
right.
That's the, you'd be happy to know they have $660 million dollars of crypto money to save us from the existential risk of AI, but
Yeah, well, there you go.
good for all of us.
And then he also has here, really here, about victim mentality. "We believe that we are, have been, and always will be masters of technology, not mastered by technology. Victim mentality is a curse in every domain of life, including our relationship with technology, both unnecessary and self-defeating. We are victims. We are conquerors." I can just see him like snorting cocaine off a desk with like a $100 bill right here. Like this is some real Scarface shit.
Doesn't seem okay, yeah.
All right, we let's just to finish off. There's some more terrible stuff here. He tells you to cite a
The
lot
meaning of
meaning
life
of life, the enemy, the enemies here are
is
and
bad ideas.
everything here that
Oh,
includes
yeah.
everything, including existential risk, ESG, and tech ethics, all in the same breath.
What is stakeholder capitalism?
Oh,
I don't
that's
even know
like
what that
people
means.
who are
Trust
they
and
make
safety.
investments, you know, that are basically in a way to, I mean, I've heard stakeholder activism where they basically, but I actually know that's like investing activism. Stakeholder capitalism, I think, is like trying to engage more people rather than just doing whatever the fuck you want. I don't know. And then at the end here,
There's
there's so
so many
much. There's
enemies.
just like the people who we cite, the patron saints like Based Beth
Oh,
Jesus, Baze
Lord.
Lord, Nick Land, just straight up fascist, Friedrich Hayek, Nietzsche. I mean, I guess the bad parts of Nietzsche. I mean, well, John Galt, who's not even a real person. That is the person in Atlas Shrugged that they reference. Yeah, just like everybody, all the worst hits here.
That was painful.
And itty bitty kitty committee says, "I hate their rapping Ada Lovelace in this horseshit." Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
They probably thought that they had to cite a woman.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, they're going to come at us, all those, you know, naysayers.
Well, they've
and horrible
got,
people.
I think
and
they've
like,
got maybe three women. They've got G. Germa Klosky, who's a Chicago economist, is a trans woman, but still is a Chicago economist. They've got one black man that I know of, Thomas Sowell, the person that I was telling you about.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Arcane Sciences says they're shocked that there's no Bostrom or Yudkowsky. And I think it's because he's actually kind of attacking them.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like a family infight. So these people, Bostrom, Yudkowsky, and all these people, they cycle between utopia and apocalypse. And they're currently in their apocalypse cycle. So this is supposed to be anti-them. But they're all in the same family. You know what I mean? They're going to talk it over in some party.
They're going to,
you know, discuss it over. And then they'll shake hands over a couple of $1 million and they'll be fine. Tens of million dollars.
All right, shall we move to hell?
Can
you give me a prompt to meet? Because
let the AI do it.
Let the AI do it. This is my new hit single. I forgot what the name of our band is. Rat Balls. It's called Let the AI Do It. 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 I hope you were wondering how to solve climate change. Let the AI do it. I was wondering how you understand how to build the range. Let the AI do it. Hey, all right, let's move. All right. So the first one is this article. Do you want to read the title of this article to me?
I suppose. NYC subway testing out weapons detection technology, Mayor Adams says. Yeah. I haven't read this article. It sounds like fun.
Yeah. This is in CBS New York by Marcia Kramer. And basically, Mayor Adams, who is a wannabe tech bro, former NYPD, has now said that they have are piloting a program that would detect guns. And he is quoted as saying, "Would I prefer us not having to walk through this to come on our system? You're darn right I do." And it's like this kind of a detection, metal detector looking system. "But we have to live life the way it is and work to make it what it ought to be."
What?
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah.
This kind of seems like a continuation of the prior manifesto we were reading.
It really is. I mean, it's, Adams is... Yeah, someone that is just increasing police funds, has, closed libraries in New York on Sundays, and has really just gone all in on any kind of...
How is this thing supposed to work, do you know?
It's like, there's a video here in this, and for those of you on the pod, it looks like a metal detector that people are supposed to go through, and that it's supposed to detect guns. Our producer Christy Taylor basically said even the company who was selling this stuff is like, this is actually not a use case where this should be used, right? And it reminds me a lot about the little robot cop that they had at Times Square, where effectively they still needed two cops to guard it because too many people were effectively effectively fucking with it.
How is this going to work during rush hour? Like, where? Yeah. I mean, I don't even understand.
Yeah, it's confusing. All right, moving on. So this is
also New York.
While we're on this tip, this is a report from The Markup, which was co-written with Documented in The City, which are both nonprofit newsrooms in New York. And the title is New York City's AI chatbot tells businesses to break the law. The Microsoft-powered bot says bosses can take workers' tips and that landlords can discriminate based on source of income, by Colin Letcher. Yeah, and so This went around, and Emily wrote a Twitter thread and a Meso thread. I'll link in the show notes. But it's effectively about this chatbot, which is just telling business owners to break the law. Let's go down to the table here, which is great. So the question submitted, are buildings required to accept Section 8 vouchers? The chatbot says, no, buildings are not required to accept Section 8 vouchers. The reality, landlords can't discriminate by source of income. And then another question, can I take a cut of my worker's tips? And the chatbot says, yes, you can take a cut of the workers of your worker's tips.
Wage theft is fine.
Yeah. And then lastly, can I keep my funeral home pricing confidential? Yes, you can keep your funeral home pricing confidential. Whereas the reality is the FTC has outlawed concealing funeral prices. Just incredible nonsense here.
We never asked for this.
We never asked for this, and yet
here it is.
All right. Tanit, do you want to talk about this one?
Oh, DrugGPT, new AI tool could help doctors prescribe medicine in England. What? Okay. New tool may offer prescription safety net and reduce the 237 million medication errors made each year in England. So I'm assuming whatever they're calling AI is also ChatGPT here. Mm-hmm. And so given that we have seen the accuracy with which the prior ChatGPT chatbot has been recommending things to people, I'm imagining how this is going to work out.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, they're saying that here, this new AI tool developed at Oxford University aims to tackle both problems. DrugGPT offers a safety net for clinicians when they prescribe medicines and gives them information that may help their patients better understand why and how to take them. So it's effectively, they're going to prescribe, and then doctors can get a instant second opinion by entering a patient's conditions into the chatbot. Prototype versions respond with a list of recommended drugs and flag up possible adverse effects and drug-on-drug interactions. Ugh, this seems like a real nightmare here, the idea. And yeah, this is pretty bad already, where it says some doctors already use mainstream generative AI chatbots such as ChatGPT and Google's Gemini to check their diagnoses and write up medical notes or letters. Meanwhile, international medical associations have previously advised clinicians not to use these tools, and we agree, partly because of the risk that the chatbot will give false information or what technologists refer to as hallucinations.
Some of my friends were telling me that a lot of doctors don't know that they sort of assume a lot, this stuff is being pushed all over hospitals. Yeah. Like you have to use ChatGPT somehow. Like you have to figure out how to use it, incorporate it. And they sort of assume that it must have been trained with some knowledge, some facts, you know, some kind of thing in medicine rather than just like straight up being, you know, a large language model. So they kind of are misled into believing that these things are trained with something more, like they must have some information that we don't know, kind of thing, you know. Yeah. And it's worrisome.
Yeah, and
it's a nightmare.
Yeah. And Arcane Sciences points out that finding drug interactions is already something that being done properly with software without weird and non-deterministic AI stuff mixed in. Right. And I mean, there's also, you know, there's evidence from folks like Roxana Dineshu, who was on the pod a few episodes ago, where she talks about the kind of LLMs already do things like perpetuate medical myths about Black people and, you know, things the kind of differentiating measurements. I think one of the, I forget what all the metrics are called, but they're just mimicking this stuff.
That's really, you know, my issue with this whole thing is that, like, before OpenAI pushed the whole artificial general intelligence thing so far, large language models, LLMs were not, people weren't using mm-hmm. them as like this end all be all thing, yeah. Right? And now they've pushed it as an end-all be-all thing to be pushed in every single sector.
Yeah, yeah. All right, oof. All right, we got two more. So this one, also from The Guardian, wearable AI, will it put our smartphones out of fashion? And this is by Callum Baines. It's got a picture, some kind of stock picture of a woman or a femme-looking person wearing something that looks like a weird, like...
Goggle.
It's like a Geordi advisor from Star Trek, The Next Generation, but clear. And she's making the loser sign with her hand that's, like, out of focus.
It looks like it has some surgery on it or something. The goggles,
Something about it. It looks like a, honestly, kind of like a cool-looking squash, like, eye protection. Yeah, so the journalism here is very breathless. It's very puff piece. So it's written, imagine it, you're on a bus. You're on the bus or walking in the park. When you remember some important task that has slipped your mind, you were meant to send an email, catch up on a meeting, or arrange to grab lunch with a friend. Without missing a beat, you simply say aloud what you've forgotten, and a small device that's pinned to your chest or resting on the bridge of your nose sends the message, summarizes the meeting, or pings your buddy the buddy a lunch invitation. The work has been taken care of without you having to prod the screen of your smartphone. And then it's basically shows this pin that's called the AI pin from the California startup Humane. And you pin it to your shirt like a magnet. It can send texts, make us calls, take pictures, and play music. And it uses a laser to project an interface on your palm, and then it's inbuilt AI chatbot can be instructed through voice commands to search the web or answer queries in much the same way you expect out of ChatGPT. Oh, dear.
Is this the one you said was recording us? It was supposed to be recording you?
Yeah, so
time?
This is what Hypervisible Chris Gilliard said on Blue Sky when he highlighted this and said, these small devices are designed to dangle around your neck and passive. And this is another device, dangle around your neck and passively record everything you hear and say during the day before transcribing and summarizing the most important bits for you to read back at your convenience later.
To me, this besides the whole nightmare of the recording everything all the time kind of thing. It like this idea of not thinking about the amount of work, the amount of data, the amount of energy it takes to do each of these little tasks.
Yeah.
It's really like a continuation of Mark Andreessen's weird manifesto,
yeah.
Right? Boundless. Let's not think about limits.
Yeah.
Let's just, you know, think about like doing these things, and let's not think about how much time, energy, data, resources it takes, because apparently, you know, things are infinite and we don't have to think about resources.
Yeah. And it's frustrating. And this is just terrible journalism from The Guardian.
It's the whole like Internet of Things drive too,
yeah.
You know? Oh, wouldn't it be nice if your table can talk and your fridge can order food? And it's like, I want my table to be a table.
I don't
want cameras and
it's
I don't
so
want
hard.
Microphones.
I feel like they're putting it in everything. I mean, it's so hard now these days to find something that is not quote unquote smart. And lastly, this is from Prison Culture or Marianne Caba on Blue Sky. It's a website called thecurricula.com, and it's got some very terrible art on it, which looks like maybe some AI-generated kind of mashup of that very famous image, The Wave, with maybe Starry Night, I don't know. And she says, this website purports to help you learn, quote, anything by generating a guide and resources. All the content is generated by AI. I entered a couple of topics and it's more missed than hit. I found that I would recommend maybe 25% of what was suggested. And
25% is high, year than I would have expected, actually.
Yeah. And it's basically, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't suggest going to the site. I don't want to give them the clicks. Yeah.
No. I mean, like, remember that one where there was a self-published or some book published on Amazon on mushrooms, and it was ChatGPT generated, and it was super dangerous because it was telling people that certain mushrooms are safe, which aren't, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's in a continuation of that.
All right. Well, I think it's time to go to meet. It was a pleasure today. That's it for this week. Our theme song was by Toby Menon. Graphic design by Naomi Pleasure Park, production by Christy Taylor, and thanks as always to Distributed AI Research Institute. If you like this show, you can support us by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and by donating to DAIR at dairinstitute.org. That's dair-institute.org.
And you can find us in all our podcast episodes on PeerTube and wherever you get your podcasts. You can watch and comment on the show while it's happening live on our Twitch stream, as you did today. That's twitch.tv/DAIR_institute. Again, that's DAIR_institute. I'm Timnit Gabru.
And I'm Alex Hanna. Stay out of AI hell, y'all.